reasonably well-intentioned person. What could that be? And he looks at you in a funny way. He says, you know. You know, it's a kind of a Kafkaesque situation where you're accused of a crime that's not specified. And yet the accuser says, you jolly well know what you've done. Of course, we can't mention it. Because, you know, it's like those laws that are on the books in the state of California and several other states where people are accused of the abominable crime against nature. Nobody knows what it is. I mean, it can't be mentioned. It's too dreadful to be talked about. So this guy does the same thing, but it's in a different dimension. You've done it. Huh? Now, what did you do? See, the real crime is that you won't admit you're God. That's false modesty. So the guru challenges, you see. He challenges you. If you raise the question, he doesn't go out and preach in the streets and say, come on, everybody, you ought to be converted. He sits down under a tree and waits. And people start coming around, and they offer him propositions. He answers back. And he challenges you in any way that he thinks is appropriate to your situation. Now, if you've got a thin shell and your mask is easily dispatched with, he simply uses what we might call an easy method. He says, listen, Shiva, come off it. Don't pretend you're this guy here. I know who you are. And the guy sort of twinkles a bit and says, well, I guess you're right. But the people aren't like that. They have very thick shells. And so he has to invent ways of cracking them. So here is how it goes. To understand yoga, you need to get hold of a good translation of Patanjali, the Yoga Sutra. I don't know which is the best translation. There are so many of them. It says, it starts out, now yoga is explained. Mm-hmm. First verse. And the commentators say, now has a special meaning because it follows from something else that you're supposed to know beforehand. That you're supposed to be, in other words, a civilized human being before you start out on yoga. We don't teach yoga to baboons. And so you're supposed to have been disciplined in artha, karma, and dharma. In politics, sensuality, and dharma, justice. And then you can start yoga. Then the next verse is, Yogas Chitta Britti Nirodha, which means yoga is the cessation of revolutions of the mind. In other words, you can interpret that at many levels. Chitta meaning consciousness, like a pool, like water, like a reflecting pool. If there are waves on that, it doesn't reflect, it breaks up all the reflections. So stop the waves on the mind, and it will reflect reality clearly. Get a perfectly calm mind. That's one meaning of it. Or another meaning of it is stop thinking. Eliminate all contents from the mind, all thoughts, all feelings, all sensations, everything. How will you do that? Well, it goes on to say you do it by certain steps. First of all, pranayama, which means the control of the breath. Pratyahara, which means preliminary concentration. Tarana, a more intense form of concentration. Dhyana, which is the same. Dhyana is Sanskrit for Zen. And that means profound union between subject and object, and finally samadhi, which is way out. Now what's happening here? Control your mind, first of all by breathing. Breathing is a very strange thing, because breathing can be viewed both as an involuntary and as a voluntary action. You can feel I breathe, and yet you can feel it breathes me. And they have all sorts of fancy breathing ways in yoga. They are very amusing to practice, because you can get very high on them. So they set you at these tricks. And of course, if you are bright, you may begin to realize some things at that point. If you are not very bright, then you'll have to go on. And so next they really get to work on concentration. Concentrate the mind on one point. Now this can be an absolutely fascinating undertaking. I suggest that you try it this way if you want to make experiments. Select a highlight on some bright, some polished surface, copper or glass or something, where there's a little tiny reflection, say of a candle or an electric light bulb. Look at it and put your eyes out of focus so that the bright spot appears to be fuzzy. A fuzzy circle. Now look very carefully at the design in the fuzzy circle and see if you can make it out. There is a definite pattern of blur, and you can have a wonderful time looking at that. Then go back, get your eyes into focus, and look at intense light. And you can go into it, and into it, and into it. Like you're falling down a funnel. And at the end of that funnel is this intense light. And go down, go in. It's the most thrilling experience. Then suddenly the guru wakes you up and says, "What are you doing that for?" "Well, because I want realization." "Why?" "Because we live in a world of, if we identify ourselves with the ego, we get into trouble, we suffer, we're in a mess." He says, "Are you afraid of that?" "Yes." "So then, all that you're doing to practice yoga is based on fear. You're just escaping, you're running away. How do you think you can get realization through fear?" Now, there's one to think about. So you think, "Well, now I've got to go on with my yoga practice, my concentrations, my exercises, but not for a fearful motive." And you know that guru, you know, he's watching you, and he's a very, very sensitive man, and he knows when you're doing, always knows what your motive is. So he puts you onto the kick of getting a pure motive. And that means very deep control of the emotions. I mustn't have impure thoughts. All right, so you go along and you manage to repress as many impure thoughts as possible, and then one day he asks you, "Why are you repressing these thoughts? What's your motive for trying to have a pure mind?" And you find out that you had an impure motive for trying to have a pure mind. That you did it for the same old reason you started out the thing in the beginning, because you were afraid, because you wanted to play, get one up on the universe. And so, eventually, you find out, you see, that your mind is what is called in Sanskrit mudra, which means crazy. Because it can only go in vicious circles. Everything it does to get out of a trap puts it more securely in the trap. Every step in the direction of liberation is a new tie-up. So that you started, you know, with molasses in one hand and feathers in the other. That was the original situation of man. The guru made you put them together, see, like that, and said, now pick the feathers off. And the more it is, the more of a mess the whole thing gets. So you get involved and involved and involved by this process. And he, in the meantime, you see, has been telling you, yes, you made a little attainment today, but it was only the eighth stage, and there are 64 altogether. And you've got to get to that, the 64th stage. And he knows how to spin it out and drag it all out, because you are ever hopeful that you'll get that thing, just as you might win a prize or win a special job or a great distinction and be somebody. That's the motivation all along, only it's very spiritual here. It's not for worldly recognition. You want to be recognized by the gods and the angels. But it's the same story on a higher level. So he keeps holding out these baits. And as long as the pupil falls for them, he holds out more baits. Until after a while, the pupil gets the realization that what he's doing is running faster and faster in a squirrel cage. That he's making an enormous amount of progress and getting nowhere. Like in Alice Through the Looking Glass, when the queen says, here you have to run faster and faster to stay where you are. And so he impresses this upon you by these methods very thoroughly. And at last you find out that you, as an ego, as what you ordinarily call your mind, are a mess. That you just can't do this thing. You can't do it by any of the means that have been held out to you. You can concentrate, yes, you've acquired a considerable power of concentration by doing all this. But you find you're doing it for the wrong reason. And there's no way of doing it for the right reason. See, Krishnamurti does this. He's a very, very clever guru. Krishnamurti says to people, now look, there is nothing you can do to be liberated. Because all your efforts in the direction of liberation are phony. They are based on your desire to boost and continue your ego. And that will never lead to liberation. All you can do, he says, is to be aware of yourself as you are, without judgment. See what is. But then, if you can do that, you have no further problem. But if you try to do it, you're in the same mess all over again. Gurdjieff played the same game in a different way. He said, the most important thing is self-remembering. Always at every moment be aware of what you're doing. Watch yourself. Constantly and never, never be absent-minded. So all day, when you know, you pick up the piece of paper, you realize, I am picking up this piece of paper. And I'm opening it inside. I know I'm doing it this way, so I'm not asleep. Ordinary people, you know, pick up a piece of paper. In this way, we're really picking up the piece of paper. And so all these people are doing this, you know, watching. Now, where do they land up? I've told this story millions of times, really. Excuse me, but it's very important. When they teach you in Japanese Zen how to use a sword, first thing that the teacher says to the student is, now, you if you're going to be a good soldier, you've got to be alert constantly. Because you never know where the attack's going to come from. Now, you know what happens to you when you try to be on the alert. You think about being alert, and then you're a hopeless prey to the enemy. Because you're not alert. You're thinking about being alert. You must be simply awake and relaxed. And then all your nerve ends are working, and wherever the attack comes from, you're ready. They liken this to a barrel of water. The water is just sitting there in the barrel. But the minute you make a hole in the barrel, the water immediately is ready to come out of that hole. So in the same way, the mind, when it is in the proper state, is ready to respond in any direction from which the attack may come. So this man is no longer alert in the sense of taut and anxious. Which way is it going to come? See? He's just sitting there. Like a cat sits there. And the minute anything happens, it's right there. Because it didn't have to overcome any set in a direction opposite to that from which the attack comes. If you are set for the attack to come from there, and it comes from here, you have to pull back from there and go there, but that's too late. So you sit in the middle, and you don't expect the attack from any particular direction. So in the same way, all this applies to yoga. You can be watchful. You can be concentrated. You can be alert. But all that will ever teach you is what not to do. How not to use the mind. Because it'll get you into deeper and deeper and deeper binds. You have to let it happen. Just like you have to let yourself go to sleep. You can't try to go to sleep. You have to let yourself digest your food. You can't try to digest it. And so in the same way, you have to let yourself wake up. Become liberated. And when you find out, you see, that there isn't any way of forcing it, that for most people is the only way of getting them to stop forcing it. Because they won't believe when you tell them in the first instance, you've got to do this without forcing it. They'll say, well, that it won't work, it won't happen, because I'm very unevolved, I'm just an ordinary human being, I'm just poor little me, and if I don't force it, nothing will happen. I have people who think that if they don't struggle and strain, they won't have a bowel movement, or whatever it is. They think they've got to do that work in order to make it happen. In other words, all that is based on lack of faith, not trusting life. And to get people to trust life who don't trust it, you have to trick them. They won't jump into the water, so you have to throw them in. And if they are very unwilling to be thrown in, they're going to take diving lessons, you see, in which they're going to go all through, they're going to read books about diving, they're going to do all the preliminary exercises for diving, they're going to stand on the edge of the diving board and inquire whether there's the right posture until somebody comes up beside and kicks them in the butt. And they're in the water. And it's also with this. It really is. So now the most amazing gamesmanship goes on in the whole domain of yoga and spiritual practice. You would be astounded. So, I mean, one of the games in all this is to find a little flaw in you, see? Everybody has a place where they can be jiggled a bit. something they're a bit ashamed of, and so they think, does this person really know?